The Burrows of Berea is a conversational podcast.
We study the Bible and we talk about it.
Not all of us are of the same faith.
And one of us doesn't have a faith.
But we still love one another, and we're going to continue to talk about these things.
The things we believe in and the things we believe about what we read in the Bible. Not all of these are necessarily true. Some of it is opinion and speculation. Thank you for
listening and speculating with us.
There you go. That was good. Yes.
You are listening to the Burrows of Berea.
Well, welcome back to the Burrows of Berea. I am Rick Welch, and I am all alone in the back studio.
Just in that room.
Yeah.
In case he farts or, I don't know, something.
So the other Burrows, here's what's going on. You just heard Rocket Man, Andy Bishop.
Pacow.
And here's the deal. So Sarita is running for public office, and she has let us know that she will not be back in the studio until after June 11th because that's when they vote. This is the primary for her district number 34 in Spartanburg County, South Carolina. Did Ralph just show up? That's amazing.
He's walking in the fence.
Good. Well, we'll just let him walk in while I'm doing the intro here, and I'm not even going to worry about the editing of it. It's just going to be great.
That's fine.
But so Ralph is coming in late. We are having a terrible thunderstorm, so I know he's probably trying not to get wet. But Sarita is running right now, and she is knocking on doors like crazy. I have learned a lot from her about trying to start a grassroots campaign with no money.
That's interesting.
Yeah, but I think it's really personable, and I'm very proud of her. She's been on the local television stations. She just did a debate. Did very well in it. And so this Republican primary, if she wins the candidacy, it's automatically she's going to get the...
It's one of those where there's
not a Democrat. It's uncontested. Yeah. So this is the race. So on June 11th, she'll know, hello, Ralph Hicks. Come over here and wave to Mr. McInnes.
Because I couldn't find on the internet or YouTube.
Yeah, that's because he is just a friend of ours. That was Ralph. And so,
hey, Ralph.
He said hi, but you can't hear because you don't have anything. Cherry is on a small sabbatical. I don't think Cherry will be back until probably July. And then, let's see. Billy is, obviously his daughters are in school, and this is the end of the school year for us here. And so they're wrapping up award ceremonies and all this other stuff. Graduation, yep. My daughter graduates tomorrow. Annabelle graduates tomorrow and from West Henderson. Samantha, my other daughter, she just graduated from Wake Forest Law School.
Nice.
Last Friday. And so I'm very proud of her. Lots going on. And Andy, of course, is here.
I've graduated from a late dinner.
Yeah.
Andy graduated from a place I lived down the street from and had friends that went to.
In Arizona.
Yeah.
Huh?
I lived right across the street from it.
So you're hearing straight out of Compton, Ralph Hicks.
I almost went there.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a great place.
I don't know, is it?
It's a lot bigger now. Those things, I kind of, like, a term I've heard that seems to fit those sort of places well is a puppy mill because of the difference between how many people they admit and how many actual real world jobs exist the difference is drastic.
Right.
The fact that I do this full time is just, it's not that I didn't work, but man, a lot of luck is involved in that.
Right. Well, today we've got a very special guest. So on Facebook, I am part of a private group. I don't know how many guys have you got. Do you remember, obviously, Gary DeMar?
Heard of him.
Yeah, you've heard of him, yep. And Gary DeMar and an associate of his, I don't know how you'd say it, a co-author of his, Kim Burgess. Actually, it was Kim Burgess's work. Gary was really more of a co-author on this work of Kim Burgess. It's called The Hope of Israel and the Nations. And it's a phenomenal book. They've already put out Volume 1. Volume 2 is going to be out here in a couple of months. Gary had a cancer scare, but he is good to go. Like, he had a nodule on his lung. They were able to get it off, so he's fine, and that's good. But there was a little bit of a respite from, I mean, he was still working. That dude works harder than anybody I know, but they're going to be getting that second volume out. Well, while I was on this group, there's a top contributor on this group, and his name is Luke McInnes, and he is from Melbourne, Australia. And Luke is on the program. What's up, Luke?
Hi, Rick. Hi, Andy. How are you guys?
I'm doing good.
It's a pleasure to join you. It's 8 a.m. my time over here, so the podcast has given me a chance to take the morning off work and get, I won't say sleep in because my kids were still up at 5 a.m., but a cruisier start to the day.
Yeah, that's awesome. So he's already enjoying, it's TGI Friday in Australia, and it is just Thursday here.
That hardly seems fair.
Doesn't seem fair.
That's a kick in the teeth for you guys, isn't it?
That's exactly right. So, Luke, well, tell me, what I want to know is, how did you find out about us?
How did I find out about you guys? So, obviously, I think the group was one of the main reasons. So I sort of deleted all of my social media maybe 2 years ago. So didn't have a Facebook account, didn't have anything like that. And then sent Kim an email, and Kim invited me into this Facebook group. And then I had to sort of set up a Facebook account. So I don't know if you've noticed, but if Rick, you've since that, you added me as a friend when I joined the group, but I think you might've been like my first or second friend. And we'd never actually met each other.
Right? No.
So I think your name was familiar because you're in my circle of four Facebook friends. So my Facebook feed is basically just Hope of Israel group posts and you sharing Burros of Berea podcast episodes. So that was how I listened to the first one. And then it's very aligned with the way I sort of see things. And I've really enjoyed listening to it. And forget what the first one was that I listened to, but I've sort of gone through a lot of the back catalog and I'm more or less up to date. I missed your one yesterday, but I listened to the one with you and Andy last week.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's cool. We when we started this, we had no idea that it was going to become what it became. I know that, but it's been a lot of fun and we've learned a lot from each other. And I think we've gotten closer to one another and challenged each other. It's been great, you know, and if you're listening to the back catalog, you'll notice that, you know, things change. We add people and it's a lot of fun. I really enjoy doing this. And it also gives me a chance to, you know, jack my jaw a lot. And so I don't have to destroy my wife every day with my mouth. You know, I can just save it.
That's why I'm on the podcast. So I can talk to someone else. My wife doesn't want to hear it anymore.
After a while, they're like, I get it. Eschatology. Oh, yeah. Oh, what was that, Andy?
Just agreement.
No, not just that, but like the, what were we talking about the other day? Like pacifism. Or like, yeah. Eschatology.
Isn't it enough that I'm a Christian?
Yeah, no. No. Anyway, so Luke, thanks so much for joining us on this. We're gonna listen to your testimony. And the way that we always start them out is I ask our guest this question. Can you tell me, to the best of your ability, what was your earliest memory of when you heard the name Jesus Christ?
Yeah, it's a good question. As I said, this is the one question that one of two questions I knew I was going to get asked. So I have had a bit of a think about it. So I grew up basically in a really classic sort of middle-class family. Australia is a very different country to America. We're like super secular, not really a Christian nation at all, even though times have changed a lot, sort of probably for the worse over the last 25 years. But I grew up in a family where mum was Italian and had sort of, you know, she was nominally sort of Roman Catholic. So I think we always had like, you know, a cross in the house, but whether mum ever actually believed, I'm not sure. And dad, I remember dad telling me maybe when I was like 7 or 8 that he was a Protestant. And that was the first time I'd ever heard that word. So I grew up always probably knowing the name Jesus Christ, but this is probably true until maybe 2 or 3, you know, maybe 3 years ago. Jesus for me was always just a name of a figurehead that gave people a reason to believe in anything. I never, you know, I mean, if you asked me when I was 31 years of age, my answer probably would have been the same as when I was 6 or 7 and first heard Jesus. I'd never really studied him or thought that he was ever a real person that actually existed, but I knew he was a symbol for a belief system that was really important to a lot of people.
Wow. Yeah. So you've heard it, but it really didn't take on meaning until your 30s is what you're saying.
No, I mean, it actually took on a lot of meaning, but sort of the opposite. I mean, I'm sort of a hardcore on the scale of things toward leaning towards sort of logical and rational around my decision making. So I'd sort of made this decision very, very early on that, you know, to be quite frank, I saw all religion and Christianity as much as any of those a coping mechanism for weak people. Mm-hmm. So the name had a lot of meaning for me, but I always just thought this stuff isn't real. So I'm not going to believe in it because I want, you know, I'm sort of above that or I'm better than that. And I want the truth and I don't need to believe in a fairy tale to make me feel good about myself.
Right. Right.
So, I mean, I laugh at myself saying these things now, obviously, and we'll get into that, but that was my head at that, you know, for 80% of my life.
Yeah. And I'm fascinated. So tell me about growing up and then I'm very curious about when that moment of salvation actually came. So just take it away and lead us on your story.
Yeah, sure thing. So, so I mentioned my sort of family dynamics growing up. My parents, I was really lucky. I had two parents that really loved me, but went through sort of not a great divorce when I was 7 or 8 years of age. And the next probably 5 years that followed, I just grew up like, I became like a 30-year-old by the age of 12. And my sort of coping mechanism was I taught myself that I just had to get on with things. I could never dwell on things and be too emotional with my decision-making. And then that led through my sort of teenage years to I really rebelled. So I was a pretty bad kid through teenage years. I was pretty heavily into things like graffiti. I was getting in fights at school a lot. And was pretty close to being like totally off the rails by about 15. My parents were really, they sort of worked really hard and put me into like a private school that, to be honest, they couldn't really afford. And it was actually a Catholic school. So I was there and I was just, I mean, they were just wasting money on me at this school. But I always got by fairly easily with the schoolwork. I could always sort of just make it work. And then come year 11, which is sort of like our second last year of high school, I sort of just flipped overnight. So Dad had been diagnosed with cancer a couple of years earlier. And in my mind, I was like, you know, Lou, pull your finger out, stop being a little turd, start to sort of focus on and, you know, rewarding your parents for the hard work they've done to put you here. So then I sort of did, I'd say about a year and a half of, I did like just a total backflip. So I went from being like the worst kid in the year level of like 250 kids to, you know, I ended up like I finished my final year with like I was probably in the top 15 or 20 kids in our year level in terms of results. And so friends around me got used, and my best friends today, my best friends back then too, people are used to me doing full backflips. So when I'll get to the point of doing, when I came to salvation later, going from a total atheist to a total Christian was sort of on par with the life they'd seen from me. So finished school, went to Melbourne University, studied commerce, finance, was totally world. And like, yeah, I was like all in. So, I read all the Warren Buffett books, all the Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, the Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And I sort of just became obsessed with not so much material wealth, but I always just wanted to work out the world and make sure that I could I could be a performer in that world and be sort of ahead of the rest of the pack. So through most of my 20s, I graduated with finance degree in 2009, so sort of peak GFC, which wasn't a great time to come out with that degree, but that led me into a really interesting journey, sort of work career through my 20s. I worked for like a couple of companies that were sort of private equity backed. I'd started up a couple of my own companies, worked in sort of the education space. I worked in just lots of different industries, just as sort of a general commercial guy, really. Did lots of investing myself through that period of time, then got, you know, call it early 30s. I was, you know, really happily married with Vic, who's, Vic and I have been together since my very early 20s and still happily together now. But, you know, Vic and I were married. We owned two houses. I own my own business. By all sort of societal measures, I was going as well as anyone could, you know, possibly imagine. And personally, it was really good too. I didn't feel like I had this like void missing in my life. Nothing, you know, I'd never got into any sort of spirituality or belief system at all. I was pretty much just a hardcore materialist, really. I did a few things, like I actually went and did a Buddhist 10-day silent meditation retreat when I was sort of in my early 20s. That was about as, you know, spiritual, so-called, as I ever got, but never really believed in Buddhism. That for me was just sort of a bit of a mental challenge that I could put myself through. And then that brings me to you know, basically the year 2020, and Amelia, our first daughter, was born in April. So, and then the sort of 12 months that followed were just an absolute whirlwind. So we've got our first daughter, and then COVID hits, and I've always been a contrarian. So I've always looked at what the pack's doing and sort of tried to really sort of study the other side of that. So when COVID first came along, I was sort of like one of these people that was, you know, on Twitter and looking at the trends of how hospital beds are going to get overwhelmed and everything. So I'm thinking purely from an investor point of view at that point, you know, that everything's going to crash here. I need to take the other side of it. I need to navigate things for my family now that I'm a young father. And then that sort of really drove me for a period of time. And then I started to really doubt the narrative that was coming out. And at the same time, I was starting to really think about my role as a father and what things I wanted to teach Amelia, how, you know, what were the values I wanted to teach her? What were the meaning of life that I wanted to teach her as she grew up? And then come 2021, I was sort of like a COVID, you know, critic, or, you know, against the pack. And then, you know, with the whole vaccine thing, I sort of was very reluctant to do that. And then that just sent me from being a, you know, top 1% of society, fitted in, could go into any sort of social circle in the country and be accepted, into being someone, I couldn't even go to the shops, right? My entire friendship network, you know, still stayed close to me, but everyone disagreed with me. Most of my family disagreed with me. You know, I'd turn on the news at night or read the papers, and I'm, you know, me and my sort of class of people are being called like third class citizens of society. And so my entire worldview was shattered. Everything that I thought mattered no longer did. And being like a hardcore rationalist, for the first time in my life, I just didn't have it together. And I remember one night I became so anxious with everything, which was just a feeling I'd never felt before. I remember one night waking up at like 3 a.m. in just a cold sweat. I just couldn't sleep. I felt sick in my stomach about sort of how I was fitting into this world. And it really, really rattled me. Then I just went down a bit of a journey of trying to sort of seek meaning. It really wasn't finding. I'm still not thinking about God at all at this point of time. And then I actually started looking into sort of history, and I'm like, at that point I was thinking, well, who are the good guys and who are the bad guys? And I actually thought that the good period of history was sort of like the middle ages, where the Catholic Church was ruling things. So that must be the good period of history.
Definitely a perspective thing there.
Yeah. I mean, I totally disagree with that now, right? But that was in my head there. So I reached out to this priest at a Catholic church. And at this period of time, I'm being shunned by every single member of society. And this priest sent me back this email. I was like, wow, it was like really good email, and I agree with him on everything. He's like, you know, come along. So I went and met this priest, and he was really friendly and really sort of helpful for where I was at that point in time. He invited me along, and I said to him, look, I sort of like the sort of morality that comes with all this, but the whole sort of believing in God and Jesus part just seems a bit of a stretch to me. But you know what? I'll come and sit along on Sundays and just sort of go along with it. So I did that journey for a little bit. There were some really crazy things that happened there. I actually own a funeral business, of all things. And I answered the phone one day. This is like a week after I've gone to that church. I've never had a conversation like this ever before. I answered our business line. It was this old guy calling, and he's called the wrong number. He was meant to call someone else. And I sort of helped him. I said, look, here's who you need to call. He said, your name's Luke. He goes, what a wonderful biblical name Luke is. He goes, let me tell you, Luke, he goes, I'm 75 years old. And until I was 65, I never believed in anything. And then Jesus came into my life. 2 weeks later, I met the woman of my dreams. I'd never been married. We married. We've been together 10 years. He goes, let me tell you, Luke, whatever you do, just go and seek out Jesus and try to find him. And I'm like, I said to her, I go, you wouldn't believe it. I said, no one's ever really spoken to me about the biblical name, Luke, you know, my name being one of the gospel writers. But I actually went to a church last week for the first time. And it's so, it's interesting that you should mention that at this point in time. So anyway, so that was just a crazy little story along the journey. But then I kept going to this Catholic church, and so a lot of it I just went along with, and I still didn't really believe. But then I started to really look into the sort of apologetics of the existence of God. And it actually, I felt like I just logically accepted that the understanding of a creator God made so much more sense to me than any of the other theories that I believed. And I would keep going to this church, and the part that I liked the most were the sermons, because they would at least sort of reference some scripture. And then that just gave me a thirst for wanting to read more and more scripture. And it was funny with this priest, every time I'd speak to him about issues or I'd have questions or whatever, I kept thinking, I'm like, why aren't you pushing me towards the scriptures? Like, why are you keeping me this book by this Catholic priest or this person or that? I'm like, why aren't you just tell me this verse to read? So then I just went off and read the Bible start to finish myself. I think I got to probably Leviticus before I realized that the Catholic Church wasn't it. And in that journey, I just...
That's totally a great place, Leviticus.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's when you decide that you don't want to do anything religious.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I thought, right, like God didn't create the Levitical priesthood, get rid of that and then replace it with a new one. That made no sense.
Are you tired of compromising when it comes to protecting your valuable firearms? Then let us tell you about Carolina Cases, your ultimate destination for hard plastic, impact-proof pistol cases. Carolina Cases are TSA approved and are crafted with high-quality foam, ensuring maximum protection for your firearms during transport or storage. At Carolina Cases, they understand the importance of safeguarding your investments. Carolina Cases provide unparalleled durability, keeping your pistol safe from impact and damage. So hop on over to www.carolinacases.net to explore their wide range of pistol cases designed to meet your specific needs. Don't settle for less. With Carolina Cases, you can ensure your firearms are safely stored, preserve your peace of mind, and protect what matters most. Enter code BUROWS at checkout to receive free shipping.
So I read the Bible start to finish. And in that period, I just totally believed I describe it to people as being like, I mean, I've had high convictions on lots of things throughout my life. I was the point where I believed it was like Jesus is real more than the sky is blue. Like it was the most perfect truth that I'd ever experienced. And it's indescribable. My entire friendship network are atheists. I literally don't have one friend who's a Christian. My entire family are non-believers. So it's a great privilege to join you guys. I really don't have many people to talk to about these things, but I know I can never explain it to people. I know people don't get it. I made a lot of mistakes in the probably first 6 to 12 months trying to like bash that against people's heads and say, hey, like, this is the truth. You just got to read it and you'll believe it too. And I think God has taught me that that's not how it works. And so I'm a lot more at peace with it. But I came to faith, and I just, my entire, it's just this peace that I felt just came over me that was just crazy. My old life, I felt like I just, you know, just trying to make more money and trying to do things. I remember waking up in the morning, I'm like, none of this matters. Like, I've found the only thing that matters here. So I, Rick, you know this, I within like 2 weeks of it, just stopped working and went and started a carpentry apprenticeship, which was pretty crazy. Like, I was, 33 at that period of time. And then I just started enjoying it. So now I'm working for like, 800 Australian a week, which is maybe like 500 US dollars a week. Out on site working for guys like 8 years younger than me that are telling me to sweep up job sites. And I just enjoyed it. And I've been doing that the last couple of years. And my life has just fundamentally changed for the better. It's just this enormous void that I probably didn't actually know existed for a lot of that time has just been filled.
So can I ask why you chose carpentry?
I had this total disconnect between my old way of thinking and my new way of thinking. I felt like I just wanted to get outside and just do something physical. I didn't choose carpentry because Jesus was a carpenter, even though I'd started to grow a bit of a beard at that point in time. And everyone's like, oh, you've just become a carpenter because Jesus was a carpenter. And now you're growing a beard as well.
It is interesting to think that the Son of God did that as an occupation. I mean, yeah, obviously really they didn't have computer analysts back in his day. You know, yeah, carpentry was a higher artisan level, of course, but it's just interesting.
It is a question I've thought about a lot. I don't know. One thing I can testify for, my whole life was based, my life before that was just sending emails. It's pretty much all I did. You know, I make calls and send emails. There's something incredibly satisfying about using your hands and physically constructing something.
Jobs, any job where you get to see it through to the end is a pretty good job. And a lot of jobs, especially when they're broken up for factory work or even just like managerial office thing, there's no job you ever get to finish. And of course, there's repetitiveness and a complete lack of really skill at some level in some jobs. And in other levels, there's skill, but then it just never changes or evolves. Yeah, carpentry is rewarding work. It's good work.
It really is.
Andy built this studio, by the way. Andy actually physically built this studio. Yeah, I actually helped him. And every time he did it, it was incredibly cold outside. But he did.
It had to not rain. And I think it was just always raining except on the cold days.
Yeah. Wasn't that the year we got the most rain ever?
It literally was.
Yeah.
It was terrible. I used to stare at the studio with like walls, you know, flat on the ground because they were built, but not stood up and like tarps over everything and just look at it like, don't ruin the floor.
Yeah. But I remember when he was doing that and it is rewarding. I built a studio years ago. My father is a master carpenter. That's what he actually did.
Oh, that's cool.
And that's for all of his life. So I understand the trade and I love the smell of wood when it cuts and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I've really enjoyed it. Before I started, I was one of these guys that, like, I didn't actually even know how to put a drill bit in a drill. Like, I wasn't sort of like a handy guy that said, all right, let's now actually sort of make a career out of this. I knew, like, nothing.
That's wild.
Yeah. I'm working with a couple of great guys at the moment. They're, like, 21 and 23, and they, like, dominate me and it is so much better than me at things, but the humbling experience of it has been awesome too, and also like the constant learning. So I was one of these people, like at school this was the case, and at jobs I'd always work stuff out really quickly. You know, I felt like I could always pretty much master anything in a couple of months, and then I come into carpentry and I'm like, you know, 2 years into it and I'm still not as good as like a fourth year 20-year-old apprentice. And it's been nice because there's always more to learn.
So now you're working as a carpenter. How's your wife handling that? Like, so now just because you change doesn't necessarily mean that she does, right? So how does that work?
Yeah, it's a great question. Initially, it was a real challenge because Vic's Croatian family heritage. So her parents are sort of devout Catholics. So through our sort of early 20s, Vic would be the one that would go to church at sort of Easter and Christmas time and, you know, maybe another couple of times a year. And I would be like, oh, what are you wasting your time doing that stuff for? She'd go and I wouldn't. And then I become Christian. And I, as with most things, and you guys can get it from what I've said, like I didn't just sort of become like a lukewarm Christian. I was like all in. So it was a real, real challenge dealing with that initially. The carpentry stuff was fine. She was actually fully in favor of it. I sort of had this crazy idea to do a carpentry apprenticeship and floated it with Vic, I reckon, on the Wednesday. And she's like, you know what? You need to do something like that. I can see, she could just see me just laboring and not enjoying myself and just being in front of the computer wasn't doing me any good. And I think I started like 10 days later. Like it was a really quick turnaround time. But the faith was really, really hard. Just coming to terms with it. initially I made a lot of mistakes with it. So I sort of thought, as I sort of alluded to earlier, I sort of thought, well, now that I believe everyone else should as well, and they just need to do, they need to follow and they need to see the things I have. Now I'm just so much more mellow than that. I'm just accepting everyone where they are at on their journey. So, it took us a while to sort of find our equilibrium, but now it's in a pretty good spot. I just, I do my thing and Vic does hers. We're still fully aligned as a husband and wife. We've got a great relationship. We've got three awesome kids now. I've been so blessed with my family. Like I was a pretty bad guy through a lot of my life and super selfish, and I've just been rewarded with these amazing gifts. But yeah, it's been challenging, but I just feel like it's in a great spot now.
That's cool. Every Christian, I think, after they become a believer, there is a fire that's in them, that really just wants to get out. And it's because of the joy that you feel. And you realize you feel this wholeness. You feel like,
learned this secret that everybody else needs to know.
That's what you feel. Yeah. And you're just like, because I'm happy, I want you to be happy. And if you don't want to be happy, I'm going to burn your house down. No, I'm just kidding. Maybe not that abrupt. But I remember that too in my early days. And I'm still talking about my faith constantly. I love the Lord and I love to talk about his word, and I just do. But yeah, I like to be chill too. I mean, obviously I have a lot of people in my life that don't believe, but I love them just the same. It is what it is.
Yeah, I'm a lot more passive in the way that I have conversations now. I'm trying to make sure everyone knows. I don't really hide it. So most people, I think, know that I'm a Christian. Melbourne, Australia is such, we're sort of like maybe New York or Los Angeles in terms of just how secular we are. So there's no one around me that's Christian. The idea of being a Christian is like, I don't know. It's almost like you got leprosy. Like it's a really weird thing for someone to be a believer here.
Yeah. You should come visit North Carolina. There's a church like on every other street.
Yeah.
Isn't that true?
Absolutely.
There's so many churches.
We could hit one with a basketball from here.
Yeah. My church is literally right there. It's true.
I mean, it's funny. We've sort of seen, it's not that there's no churches here. It's like, there is a bit of quite a Catholic influence, and there are churches, but I think people just look at them as relics of a past age that don't actually mean anything. So, if you go to the average church in Australia, it's like I actually went to, my church journey's sort of been interesting too, but I went to one church, and honestly, the average age there was like 75 years old. I got there with Thomas.
So there were relics in the relic.
Yeah. And they like, what are you doing here?
Yeah. Yeah. How is that possible? So like you just said, you've had a journey, through churches. I have to ask, so how did you know Kim Burgess? Did you just pick up his book and then reach out to him, or did you know him before? Like, how did that happen?
No, I didn't know Kim. So I was, as you know, Rick, I listen to you a lot on the podcast, and I think we're sort of similar. Like I have this, I used to read heaps. I've watched heaps of videos on everything. I was never content with not knowing anything. Like if I wanted to know something, I needed to know all of it. I needed to know every alternative position on it, and I needed to make sure that I had the correct one. And then I come to faith, and I get this Bible that's, this old book that's just been sort of sitting in the middle of the room my entire life, and I've never even looked at it. And since then, I basically haven't read anything except for the Bible, right? So I'm just like, I devour it, and I'm trying to get my head around, all right, what's my position on this? What's my position on this? And it's this like amazing intellectual challenge as much as anything else that I've thoroughly enjoyed in my faith journey. But I started out probably like most. So, I was like, I'm pretty secular and worldly, but I started out as like a conspiracy theorist, call it, right? So I was of this view as sort of like good versus evil, and I got to take the side of good, and where's evil? And now I totally disagree with that. I love like the Deuteronomy 32 verses, like you know, I kill and I wound. Like, it's God doesn't, it's not God versus evil. Like, he's sovereign over all things. So I really moved away from that, you know, that sort of conspiracy crowd that's just totally stuck in focusing on worldly things and missing being led by the Spirit, I think. But so I'm sort of digging through the Bible, and then I came to this point maybe 12 months ago, and I'm one of these guys. I was like, we're in the end times. Like, we're looking at the signs. There's wars, there's rumors of wars, you know, all that sort of stuff. And then I was reading...
Isn't that funny how you can't notice? It's funny how you go your whole life and you never notice. Then you pick up the Bible and you start to read. Yeah. And then you start to look around and you start hearing things. And then you're like, oh, I found out just in time the world is almost about to end.
Yeah.
Isn't that bizarre?
Like, I'm the center of the universe, right? Like, it's, you know, God has... And I honestly felt that. Like, and that was me being so selfish and self-centered. That it's like I had this special calling that I'd been plucked out just in time.
Absolutely. And it can't, in fact, be true because I am the center of the universe.
Right. Andy's the center of the universe.
Yeah. We all are. There's a great speech from, who is it? Is it David Foster Wallace called This Is Water? And he's not a Christian. He's a secular guy who ended up committing suicide because he asked all these big questions and never found God. And I think decided that there was no reason to live. So that's but he's written some awesome stuff. And he did this speech on This Is Water. And he basically goes, there's two young fish swimming along, and they go past this old fish, and the old fish looks at him. He's like, "Morning, fellas, how's the water?" And they keep swimming along, and then the two fish look at each other and they're like, "What the hell is water?" and the moral of the story is that they're just swimming along in this world that they are the center of, and they never even consider the things around them.
Yeah. I thought the moral of the story was that the old fish couldn't feel the water anymore. He's having to ask the kids how the water's doing.
Well, it's funny.
I get it, how the world is, yeah.
So I'm the center of the universe. The end times are now. We are the 7 years tribulation's about to start, and I've just been woken up in time for it. And then about 12 months ago, I start to read like the Olivet Discourse a bit more, and I'm reading Matthew 24. I'm like, this generation, you know, and a few other, and I'm like, hang on. I'm like, this is past. This is 70 AD, and that just flipped my entire sort of understanding of the whole Bible. And I had to humble myself. Like, I'd been totally, you know, I'd written posts about it. I'd sent friends messages saying, you know, you got to wake up, we're in the tribulation and all this sort of stuff. So I was totally wrong. And then that shattered my worldview again. But obviously by this stage of my life, I'm comfortable with worldview being shattered. I'll just move on.
I just move on. You just get used to it, don't you? Yeah, it's a constant.
And then I went on this long journey of trying to work out, well, hang on, if Revelation's past, Olivet Discourse is past, what did that mean? I went through a bit of a period of thinking we were like in the little season. So, you know, that 1,000 years ago, now Satan has been loose. I think that's the natural first step.
It feels like you're in the little season by the way that the world feels. It doesn't.
It totally does.
Yeah.
It absolutely does. So,
but it also felt that way 100 years ago, or 75 years ago, 200 years ago, 300 years ago. It's always the little season, it seems.
It's always the little season.
Can you guys tell me what the little season is?
Yeah. Will you sum up for Andy what the little season is, sir?
So the book of Revelation, Andy, which I'm sure you know enough about. So it talks about that Christ will reign 1,000 years. And at the end of towards the end of the 1,000 years, the devil will be loosed to deceive the nations for a little season. And then at the end, then Jesus will come with fire from the sky and destroy the devil, right? So there's all sorts of
this 1,000-year millennial reign is a peaceful time where Satan can't do this. So it's to be thought of as 1,000 literal years to some. It's a literal. It's not to me, it's symbolic, but it's to them, it's literal. Yeah. And then after a while, after that 1,000 years, then Satan is loosed from the pit. He's been dragged into a pit. Now he has the ability to wreak hell on the earth, right?
Boy, if you're waiting for 1,000 years of peace, don't hold your breath.
Well, and the thing is, that's just it.
Anyway, thank you. Yes, that's good.
This episode is brought to you by Carolina Cases. Are you tired of compromising when it comes to protecting your valuable firearms?
Yes.
No. Okay, fine. I'm cool with firearms. I just don't have any. But I can see why you would want to protect them, right? So let us tell you about Carolina Cases, your ultimate destination for hard plastic, impact-proof pistol cases. Carolina Cases are TSA approved and are crafted with high quality foam, ensuring maximum protection for your firearms during transport or storage. At Carolina Cases, they understand the importance of safeguarding your investments. I can understand that. I have investments. I just don't have firearms. Carolina Cases provide unparalleled durability, keeping your pistol safe from impact and damage. So hop on over to www.carolinacases.net to explore their wide range of pistol cases designed to meet your specific needs. Don't settle for less. With Carolina Cases, you can ensure your firearms are safely stored, preserve your peace of mind, and protect what matters most. So go to www.carolinacases.net. And then enter code Burrows at checkout to receive free shipping. That's B-U-R-R-O-S at checkout to receive shipping. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, so well, people will say that passed. So I mean that so the 1,000 years has passed. So one of the theories out there was that, you know, the so-called dark ages from, you know, what, 400 AD to 1500 or the Reformation were actually the 1,000 years, and that Jesus reigned physically, you know, in some place, and then Satan was loosed, and then Jesus and the saints went and have been hiding somewhere through that little season, and now Satan's been given dominion for 250 years.
Right. There's all kinds of sects that think wild stuff.
There is so many. So I'm there, but then I got to the point where the mistake I was making was letting the world interpret scripture rather than letting scripture interpret the world. You just cannot be consistent saying that there's a future second coming and that also the second coming was past. You can't split them. Now that is crazy for most people's worldview, because then you're like, well, hang on, is this it? Like, is this the sort of eternal state? That sort of doesn't seem right for me. Is this the eternal state? So then I really just tried to dig into it. And I started getting into this question of, well, hang on, this can't be the new heaven and the new earth. I'm digging more into that. And I'm like, oh, it can't be, but is it? What does that mean? And then I come across this Kim Burgess podcast with Gary DeMar. I've listened to all 25 episodes straight.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Yeah.
Because we got him in a mess. That was us. We got Gary in a mess. When he did, right. Yeah, went by asking the final question, and then they came after him, and so he made the other podcast. You're welcome.
Yeah, right.
Well, don't look at me. All I was doing was filming.
Yeah.
It's amazing how vilified you get within the church by saying that, by being full preterist.
Sure.
It's like, I mean, people want to kill you by saying it. Everyone's holding on to this fleshly future resurrection, so...
I mentioned that to my old pastor and got an hour's worth of telling me, because I said, hey, what do you think about this? I read this. And for an hour, he's usually a 5-minute guy. For an hour, he's telling me how out of my mind I am.
Yeah, like you're a heretic, you're this and that. So, I mean, I'm sort of comfortable being a contrarian. I'm comfortable with everyone hating me and saying I'm wrong and they're right. So it hasn't really worried me, but... It is fascinating just how controversial a position it is, but I think the scriptures are just clear on it. And as much as that hurt my own worldview, so after the series, I sent Kim an email. I dug out like Gary DeMar's. I mean, this was sort of like me in my pre-Christian life. I'd always get in contact with people and try to ask some questions. Hence why I'm a top contributor in that group.
Right.
I emailed Kim, invited me to the group, and here we are.
Isn't that wild? Yeah, that's wild.
So where do you think we are now?
I think we're in the new heaven and the new earth. And we're in I'm in the kingdom. You guys are in the kingdom. We're all there. The spirit dwells on earth. The dogs and the sorcerers are outside. And most of the church denies their king rules. So we're being trodden under the foot by men.
Yep. And the gates of the city will never be shut. And so we're going to continue to... try to get them to the leaves for the healing of the nations.
Exactly. And I mean, I'm a perfect testament to this, right? Like I am a total non-believer, a total atheist, never even considered Christ in my whole life. And in what in the initial period I thought was the great tribulation, the end times, I came to faith. Like, the gates are open.
Yeah, they are.
And in coming to faith, I have took dominion over all these things. Like, they have no dominion over me anymore. We just need to stop thinking about that physically.
Yeah, and like you said, all of us need to stop thinking that we're the center of the universe, you know, and because we do. A lot of us do think that way.
Yeah.
Well, so I'm going to ask you the final question, and we'll wrap up this. We're getting close to an hour here. So when you take your last breath here on earth, so you already believe we're in the new heaven and new earth. So when you take your last breath here on earth, what happens?
It's a great question. I'll answer it, but I'm going to start by saying all that I'm doing here is speculating because...
Yeah, you got to be careful with this one, apparently.
Yeah.
One thing that I've learned over time, you know, as I've studied the scriptures, are that there's a lot of things that the scriptures are silent on, or a lot of things that the scriptures speak very little of, and that people make a big deal about and even write entire books or video series or TV series or so forth. And I think this is one of them. The thousand years is another. I always found it fascinating that so many eschatological positions were based on this thing that was mentioned twice at the end of one letter in Revelation. So the end of, you know, my last breath, I truly am at the point now where I have full, like, just total faith and full trust. So I don't fear death at all. I don't fear this idea of leaving my family. I have full faith that the Lord protects my family and will do whatever he needs to do for them. So I no longer hold on to that sort of worldly need to preserve my life for as long as possible. So when I take my full breath, I think I'm, absent from the body and present with the Lord. What does that look like? I've got no idea. What I do know is that, you know, when you go on like a holiday to somewhere for the first place, like, you know, I've heard stories about how beautiful the beaches in Croatia are, and then you get there. When you get there, they're never like what you thought. It's generally better. There's feelings, there's smells, there's sounds, there's visions in these places that you could never be described until you actually experience them for the first time. So what the eternal state is like, I don't know. I know it's going to be infinitely better than anything I've ever experienced in this earthly existence. And I'm looking forward to it, but I'm comfortable, which goes against the grain of my usual way of thinking. I'm comfortable not knowing until I get there.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, fully trusting him. Luke, I'm so glad that you came on and shared your testimony with us. That's so cool.
Yeah, man, thank you.
Nice to meet you.
It's been really good. I've thoroughly enjoyed chatting about it. And as I said, I'm really happy to have an audience of three people and whoever tunes into this that will listen to me. And Vic, my wife, really thanks you guys as well, because this is 50 minutes that she didn't have to listen to me talking about this stuff.
Yeah. And you know what, Luke? Something else that you can do is Rick Carter and I, we do every other Thursday now on Zoom. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to send you an invite to that. And if you can ever make it, then you can just hop on and you can talk with us. See me and Rick talk, because then we don't have to talk to our significant others about it. And then it keeps peace in the home.
Speaking of which, my in-laws are in town. So how does this all work with your in-laws?
Oh, good question.
Have we got another hour? Let's just say that Catholic baptism for our children has been a bit of a challenge, explaining why we're not doing that.
Sure. I'm sure.
But well, hey, I love them. They've been so good to us. They're great grandparents. We still get on really well, but the Catholic versus Protestant or sort of Bible solo scriptura positions remain an issue to this day.
Yeah. I imagine if you're on the Protestant side, you will always be at odds with the Catholic side. That's just how it's going to be. Yeah. Yep. Well, Luke, thanks so much, man. And happy Friday to you, even though we're on this rainy Thursday here. Happy Friday.
Let us know how Friday is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it should be good. Well, it's we're sort of getting towards the middle of winter now. We don't get...
Oh, my God. I forgot about that entirely.
Yeah, yeah, we're like the opposite time of day, opposite time of year with seasons, opposite everything. So I'll be outside for the next sort of 6 or 7 hours whacking up a wall frame and then finish up work, have a couple of crazy hours of bedtime and bath time with the kids, and then hopefully sit on the couch and maybe enjoy a cold beer later tonight.
Yeah, very good.
Well, just as you guys are getting into your Friday morning.
Yeah, and just remember, whenever you flush your toilet, it goes counterclockwise versus
clockwise. That's not even true.
It's not true. It's not. It's actually not. It's the design of the toilet. It has nothing to do with where you are.
The Simpsons lied to us all.
It's the Coriolis effect in your toilet.
Oh, y'all are backwards.
Anyway, Luke, I really appreciate it, man. You take care, and I'll send you that other invite. Maybe we can just keep chatting.
Perfect, Rick. That sounds great. And thank you, Andy. And thank you all. It's been a great time chatting. And you too, Ralph, even though we didn't really get to chat all that much with your little head there in the bottom corner.
Yeah. All right. Take care, Luke.
See you later, guys.
We'll see you. Hey, guys. This is Rick from the Burrows of Berea. A lot of people have been asking us, hey, what is this Patreon thing? Our old Patreon ad didn't work very well. So here you go, guys. Go to www.patreon, that is patreon.com. Let me do that again. patreon.com/TheBurrowsOfBerea. If you go to the Patreon page, you will find that we have different levels that you can give at. We have a $3 level, a $5 level. We've got a $10 level and a $20 level. I thought about putting a $1,000 level there, but you never know how that's going to work out, right, Andy? That's right. So go to www.patreon.com/TheBurrowsOfBerea and give us all of your money.
even a little bit will be fine.
Yeah. And that 5,000 wouldn't hurt my either.
No, it would hurt nobody.
Thanks, guys. From what part of Australia are you from?
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, I'm from Melbourne. Basically the far south. I don't think I need to be introduced as anything more special than that, really.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you want me to add to it or anything?
No, not really.
Okay.
I'm sure we'll probably get into it, but I think, I think probably the interesting part is sort of my journey going from being a Melbournean here with a complete lack of faith to, a really strong faith in such a short journey of time. And, I probably would have had plenty of labels on myself through my sort of 20s and early 30s. Now I'm just sort of a humble Christian that works as an apprentice carpenter. So,
yeah, that's great. Well, then that's how I'll introduce you here in a little bit. And so this is a testimony episode, so you're going to be doing most of the talking.
Yeah, cool.
Okay.
Sounds good.
We want to hear the story. And have you listened to any of our testimony episodes before?
Yeah, I have. I've really enjoyed a lot of them.
Okay, so you know how we ask like a couple of different questions. We always ask one at the beginning and one at the end.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, yeah, I'm across to them. So I've had a bit of a think about them, but I'm generally speaking a bit of a sort of fly by the seat of my pants guy. So
yeah,
I work well with no agenda. And
yeah, that's the way I like it too myself.
Yeah. I don't know whether that's a cop out for laziness, but it's just always sort of worked for me.
Right.
Winging it works for
I'm
me too.
I'm thinking that I may go ahead and start and then we'll just let Ralph pop in and what'll happen, Luke, sometimes Ralph, because of his schedule, he comes in just a hair late. And so what we'll do is I'll hold my hand up and I'll be like this right here. And then that will tell you to stop. And then we'll kind of hold position. We'll let him come in. And then I'll be like, hey, Ralph just showed up. Okay.
Yeah, easy.
All right.
And you guys, if there's any break or anything, you guys just edit it.
Yeah. Yeah. Andy does all.
Yeah, we just cut out.
There's no you guys. It's Andy only with the editing.
And whereabouts are you guys?
We are in a little town called Hendersonville, North Carolina. We're not far from Asheville in western North Carolina, up in the mountains.
I'd be amazed if a guy from Australia has heard of Asheville.
Have you ever heard of Asheville, North Carolina?
No, I haven't. I've never been to North Carolina.
That would be a big surprise. It's a very small city.
Yeah.
I've been to the States. Oh, I've probably been a few times. I've been probably been like 5 or 6 times, but I've only ever done the major cities. I've never been outside of.
Sure.
I mean, I did San Diego. I guess that counts as a smaller city, but yeah, I've only ever been to the main parts.
Right.
And any time I've ever been to the States, it's been sort of for a shortish period of time, you know, a week, maybe 2 weeks maximum.